I'm Bill Keith, and I enjoy digging through all the new releases we've received to find the best new music for you. I focus on singer-songwriters across a wide variety of genres. Add in some blues, maybe a dash of gospel music, and some indie rock to mix things up, and you have Light from the Underground. I want to take a moment to thank Henry Ford College for making WUHFR possible. Their investment allows us to create radio that's focused on our community. Check out Light from the Underground, Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 89.3 WUHFR.FM. We're making waves.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Welcome to this Friday edition of the WHFR Journal. Every edition of the WHFR Journal is a Friday edition because we love to celebrate Fridays here at WHFR. It is a pleasure to be with you today as we are winding out the summer season and coming into fall with a blast. Susan McGraw here. You will hear from my colleague, Alan Mazurek, a little later in the program, but we are so excited to talk about some of the staples of the fall season, really at least the start of some things that happen as we kick into fall here in the Metro Detroit area. We know the weather changes. We start smelling the pumpkin spice candles around, you know, and we see the cinnamon donuts from the cider mills. And oh, I just love all of that. But one of the other things that we have learned coincides with the changing of the season is the opportunity to experience some of the best of the best of what this community has to offer. And that is to be said with art. It is to be said with, with video and television and radio, but also, and most excitedly for today's program, it all relates to the concept of being able to experience some beautiful live music, literally in our own backyard. So I am speaking about the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra, and we are absolutely celebrating what will be the start of the symphony's 61st season. 61st season. That is just absolutely exceptional. And it is my pleasure to sort of help me take this journey on what we can anticipate and ways that you, as our listener, can get involved and should get involved with this celebration of sound, as they're calling it, none other than music director of the Dearborn Symphony, Maestro Stephen Jarvie. Stephen, it is just a pleasure to have you here again. It seems like we're sort of circling around to this every year, but it really was just like 2 weeks ago. It seemed like the last time we had this discussion. Time flies, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me, Susan. And yes, time has flown. Last time I spoke to you, the only people I could speak with were over the computer. So I am excited that we get to share a lot about our very much live and back to kind of normal season. And it's certainly not normal. It's a thrill, and it's a wide variety of great music that's being presented at our extraordinary concert hall. I mean, I think that's actually, not to steal your first question, but that's the thing that a lot of people I wish would know, is how incredible the Michael Guido Theater is at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. It's a place that we share the parking lot with the police station, so safety is never an issue. It's the largest community, community complex in America. And it's truly, it's a world-class concert hall. And it's a very comfortable concert hall. It's, great parking, great experience for the whole audience. And I don't know, there's something about that kind of simplicity of how great our concert presenting is, just that element, that I'm so excited to get back to, because most of the time I've been trying to come up with really clever ways to share music, either in a shortened way or over the computer. So we are happy to be presenting our full 22-23 season this year.
Yay! Love it. Couldn't have said it better myself. Couldn't have asked a question, but you really were reading my mind. It is all about getting back in and getting to experience this thing that so many of us have missed, with the opportunity to experience live music and the icing on the cake, or the bonus, or what I think really is foundational, as you indicated, is the venue itself. It is there to support and uplift what is already a really good product and make it even that much better. So this is so exciting. Now, we might be, sort of tempering the audience a little bit here, Stephen. We have, I'm sure, many listeners right now saying, oh yeah, I used to go to that a long time ago. Or I've been to the symphony a time or two, and Dearborn Symphony, they're great, and so on. Or I've always wanted to. And then when I was going to have the chance, well, unfortunately, the last 2 years have not allowed the opportunity. So we're speaking, I think, to a number of different people in a number of different scenarios listening to our to us talk today. So what would you say would be the sort of boil it all down, sort of that quintessential reason for coming to the Ford Performing and Community, you know, Community Performing Arts Center on Michigan Avenue there to start off the season, October 7th, Journey on the Orient Express. What is it about live music and the ability to experience it at its purest at this beautiful venue that really should motivate people to get those tickets, to get in those seats?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I was struck by how moved I was coming back to a lot of live concert experiences. We kind of forget that natural kind of human sense of empathy that we all have when we share a space together. I love Bruce Springsteen's autobiography where he calls it the magic trick, where a space is just an empty place with empty seats and no sound and the lights are off. And then all of a sudden, 45 minutes later, it's come to life. And, you know, I have to credit our venue, but also very much our musicians. We have some of the finest musicians in the region. This is that's the coupon alone. The coupon is the fact that you're going to pay very, very low prices for tickets to see a phenomenal, like very high level show, a national level sounding show. And it just conveniently is in a place that, you know, has nice seating and all those good things. But there's a warmth and excitement to the season. And I think you will be shocked to be back in a space if you haven't been joining us. Just the sonic quality. I love to tell people that whether they've been to a concert or not, all they need to do is just sit there and let the sound wash over them. And whatever they feel is the correct answer. Okay. And so what I love about how we're starting the season is that we're starting in a kind of a more lighthearted, fun gala style with this Journey on the Orient Express. This was a concert that was really inspired for me by this poster that I looked at, these beautiful kind of, you know, turn of the century, almost deco looking posters that advertised the old Orient Express route. And especially since I really love travel and I've seen things about the Orient Express coming back and whatever. And so the idea of starting musically at London's Victoria Station, London, obviously a great musical town, then going to Paris, then moving our way through Germany to Vienna and all the way on to, you know, Turkey and Constantinople, now Istanbul. Istanbul is Constant. Okay. We're not doing that, but that's a great song too. Just seeing the map of that train route inspired me so much because I was like, man, that is just an absolute whistle stop tour of hit musical cities. So we are having this concert be presented without intermission and kind of a lighthearted gala style. Like I said, we have a special guest conductor to conduct God Save the Queen. Still, it is still God Save the Queen on this program because we're kind of taking a trip back in time. And yes, I will be conducting that musical train throughout the performance. On that performance, you know, we begin with the idea of the crowd getting ready to go on the train and the kind of frolicsome nature of just hopping on this adventure with Benjamin Britten's frolicsome finale from his Simple Symphony, a super fun little 4-minute movement from one of the first things he ever wrote. Then we contend with these two obnoxious passengers that keep talking about the rain in Spain. From My Fair Lady, we have all sorts of musical selections from My Fair Lady and a very fun medley there. Then we actually feature Dennis Carter. We move on to France and we feature our principal flute player, Dennis Carter, in a piece by Mouquet, which is basically Pan's flute. And he's one of the guests along our journey. So it's great to always highlight musicians from our orchestra and have them come up front. But it's also fun that, I don't know, that this is much more of a, maybe he'll wear a beret or something. We'll get to have some laughs also while we're performing this great music. That's also a concerto that many flute players perform on with piano, but you rarely hear with live orchestra. So that's exciting. Another thing that you rarely hear with live orchestra as we make our way polka-ing across Germany all the way to Vienna is Johann Strauss Jr.'s Railway Delight Polka. This is super fun. It's honest. I'm giving a little something away, but I play like a very ridiculous train horn train whistle sounding thing throughout this piece. And it's all just very much fun. I love that sense of lightheartedness when it comes to Strauss's music. The most familiar piece also by Strauss is probably next, which is As We Arrive in Vienna. We have his On the Beautiful Blue Danube waltz. It is always fun to perform this extremely witty waltz. And, you know, we continue on all the way, even through the Czech Republic with Dvorak. Antonín Dvořák was actually kind of obsessed with trains. He was a train watcher. That's a thing. And we play his Humoresque, which is just a nice lighthearted, again, lighthearted short piece. And as we kind of make our way to the destination, as we get towards the end of our program, we actually do have a little bit of murder mystery with the Murder on the Orient Express waltz. This is a piece of music that did become pretty popular after the film. The film was 1974, so the late 70s, early 80s, you would hear this waltz performed very specifically at the BBC proms in London. And it's just one of these overly romantic, joyous waltzes, but something you don't often hear. And then we end the program with Liszt's Second Hungarian Rhapsody, which is just a whole bunch of almost cartoonish fun, as it's probably most famously known from Tom and Jerry. But that is how we kind of lay out the first concert, which, again, is it's a bit of a musical travelogue. We visit some very famous musical cities. We highlight some of our musicians. And I love the fact that this is something that immediately presents that this is a different kind of orchestra, that we don't take everything super seriously. And this whole season has a wide variety of offerings. We do have a very standard classical fare. We have movie music. We have a very unique pops concert. I'm really proud of how dynamic the season is.
Oh, as you should be. We have an opportunity to really experience a sort of a sampling or taste of everything this entire season. And I know some people will get the whole season ticket thing and just plan to attend every single one. And then others will sort of pick and choose what might appeal more to their family, which is certainly appropriate as well. But regardless, we want to make sure that our listeners know what to expect this coming season. And we are talking with Maestro Stephen Jarvie of the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra, conducting the first series of performances for the season, October 7th, Friday, October 7th, Journey on the Orient Express. And I love that you're conducting something related to trains. There's that sort of play on words, the whole conductor conducting thing. I know.
I have to tell you, when I first met my wife, we were set up on a blind date, and I took her to Carnegie Hall to see Sarah Jessica Parker narrate Peter and the Wolf as like this fundraiser thing. And I told her at the beginning of the date that I was a conductor. And she said, I love trains. I take New Jersey Transit every day. And I said, no, not the choo-choo kind, this kind. You know, not this way, but this way with the pattern. So I get the train connection a lot.
That's wonderful. How sweet. Thank you for sharing that insight. See, it's the things we scoop here on this show. That is wonderful. And we thank you for listening, by the way, as we continue on with this discussion this Friday afternoon. The Dearborn Symphony Orchestra, we are very excited at WHFR to provide a lot of classical programming. We have big band, we have cabaret, we do you know, movie themes, we do a variety of musicals as well. But we are most excited to be a media partner with the Dearborn Symphony, because we get the inside scoop on these kinds of things. So we're lucky to do that, and we love sharing this with our listeners. So we thank you, Stephen, for making yourself available as you're gearing up for this season. And, you know, you've hinted a little bit to some of the sort of special or unique qualities that the 61st season is offering here in the 22-23, but it's officially titled Celebration of Sound. And I think as I'm looking through all of the different, you know, aspects of what you've got going on for the season, there really are very unique celebrations of sound. And you called it a sonic experience a little bit ago. Speak more about that. And also, what goes into or who is involved in actually selecting the season before we, you know, continue on teasing some of the upcoming ones beyond October 7th?
Sure. No, that's a great question. And, you know, I love this idea of each concert being feeling like a celebration. One of the great things about having a season that is, you know, only four or five concerts long, that is that every concert can really feel like an event. So that's the celebration part. And I do think that the sonic experience of being in the room where it happens is an amazing one that I never get over. I mean, as much as I think to myself, like, oh, yeah, I bet that'll be a good concert. Then when you're there experiencing it, it's just times 10. And because of the fact that this season offers a lot of different of these sonic experiences, a lot of different sounds coming from the orchestra, everything from these extremely romantic and kind of narrative hero feeling music of John Williams, where he's taking us through the film, to the kind of traditional classical music that you might hear from either the Brook Violin Concerto coming up later in the year or this opening concert. But we also have new music by Adam Schoenberg, his Finding Rothko, which has kind of a musical representation of these beautiful Mark Rothko paintings. Really, every way the orchestra can create beautiful sounds for the audience is represented here. And of course, I know it when I say a symphony orchestra, people think to themselves, bum, 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 bum. And they think about, you know, the very traditional classical sounds. I'm proud to say that we are offering all of that and more. Especially because classical music, I think the way people relate to film music is important for classical music, especially like my generation forward. John Williams and film music and this kind of thing has sort of taken over the romantic orchestral experience, which was naturally happening. So there's no reason to poo-poo film music at all. It is a natural progression of where beautiful sounds and interesting sounds and tension-filled sounds and joyous sounds can lead you. So, I mean, even to end the season, we have Pictures at an Exhibition, a pretty traditional piece in terms of what a symphony orchestra has to offer. But, oh my goodness, every way to play the instrument is presented there. You know, you have people striking the instrument and pitching, and there's things that are very harmonious and things that are very dissonant, but we love it all the same. And I just love the way that this kind of season can feel very classy to me as a frequent concert goer, as someone that has attended more concerts than you could possibly imagine, and someone that's never been to a concert. I love, at first when we said that we had a date for not to skip ahead, but for St. Patrick's Day, I was terrified because they immediately said, oh, we don't want to do just one of these shows off the shelf, one of these lovely shows like, you know, Celtic Women, or there's a million of these shows that are fantastic, kind of out of the box that you can rent these guest artists. They said, no, we're going to make our own St. Patrick's Day celebration. I thought, oh, that's an interesting challenge. And so for that concert, we're pairing with Jonathan Lash and Caitlin Lynch, Caitlin Lynch Lash, because she is married to Jonathan. She's one of the great Metropolitan Opera sopranos. She's just down the street. Jonathan is an extraordinary baritone that we've featured with the orchestra before and teaches at Wayne State. So to have a local talent that happens to have kind of an Irish history in their family, Caitlin's family has been singing these traditional Irish tunes since she was born. So to be able to create a concert all around both their family and their talents and a really unique, interesting night of the symphony with music I don't get to perform that often, it's just a perfect example of how this season is just every concert is something, you know, fun and adventurous. In terms of how we actually create the season is, you know, there's a certain amount of eat your Wheaties that you want to have in there. So you want to make sure that you do have some kind of classical staples in your repertoire. There's always things that haven't been performed in a long time by the orchestra that probably should. There's the collaborative element of saying, oh, we want to have one or two guest artists this year, maybe one from the orchestra and maybe one from outside the orchestra, or maybe some people from out of town, maybe some people from in town, etc. So it's this really interesting, it's actually one of the most complicated things a music director does, is putting together this almost kind of witch's brew to make sure that everything boils and bubbles just right. And that has to do with not only the ebb and flow of the entire season and how the musicians approach that, but even just how a single concert experience will ebb and flow so that we feel a certain amount of emotional peaks and valleys and end up feeling satisfied with the kind of concert experience that maybe either we wanted or we didn't even know that we wanted.
Stephen Jarvey is joining us on this WHFR Journal, 23rd of September edition, the last September Friday, and we move into October. Hard to believe we are also officially in the fall season, and with the fall season comes the start of this beautiful, beautiful music that we have learned to know and expect from the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra. It does sound like while we may know much of what we might be getting, or many of the pieces that are listed as I'm looking at the brochure, many of them are certainly unexpected. And I like that you spoke to that a little bit, Stephen. I love the surprises that are sort of interwoven here in with not only with a specific topic for a show, but even within, as you indicated, within the show itself. So in conjunction with the October 7th event, we actually have sort of an opening night, a party or a reception opportunity called Taste of the Orient Express, and that takes place on the same day, the same evening, Friday, October 7th, from 6 until 7:30, just before the concert itself. Tell us a little bit about what we would expect, Stephen, if we're fortunate enough to get tickets to that event.
Well, you should absolutely come to that event, because I'll be there, and we will all be very excited to kind of be in an old-timey, grand travel sense of mind. And you know, these are just the best way for people to kind of re-commune, right? Like a lot of our concert goers haven't seen each other in that kind of context for a long time. So I just think it's going to be fun. And any of these kind of concerts that are presented, like I like to put this in the bucket of themed light classics, which is actually one of my favorite things, because, you know, it's kind of like an evening with Victor Borge. You get some laughs. You get some moments of like real beauty. Like that was the kind of elements of entertainment and music making that I liked growing up. So I think that this party is exactly a way to get yourself in the mood. You know, the concert going experience is all about you meeting an expectation you want. It's not about you meeting the expectation of the symphony. So many people ask me like, oh, do I have to wear a tuxedo? No, you do not. You can wear anything you want, probably not Daisy Dukes, and anything else is fine. You know, so for people that want a champagne and cocktails and wearing our finest experience, you can have that experience, and you can certainly start it off with a fun party like that and then go on to the concert. But if you just want to have a casual night with your friends and music is a part of it, like, come on over. There is no judgments on our side. I love a good casual concert. So between this party, you can have some food, you can have some drinks, and then go on to a concert that, again, has no intermission. So it's kind of perfect for our party goers.
Mm, that makes perfect sense. I'm going to pop some information out here for listeners. Always best place to get updates, information, details, and also acquire tickets to these events is through the website DearbornSymphony.org, DearbornSymphony.org. But we do know that there's also a box office. And for more information, if you prefer to do it old school, you can call 313-565-2424. That's 313-565-2424. And I am reading here that there is a little bit of a discount on the ticket if you get it before September 30th. So a little $5 break there, a party ticket, $60. That does include a beverage ticket. And again, as you mentioned, Stephen, hearty hors d'oeuvres, there's dessert. It takes place in Studio A. It's a lovely area to have that pre-concert event. So we've got the Taste of the Orient Express, and then the Journey on the Orient Express. And then during the show, we actually do have some Murder on the Orient Express. And what a wonderful, wonderful opportunity in that trip that you are conducting all the way, as you indicate, from London all the way to and through Turkey. So how wonderful. We talk about pieces, and I'll tell you, I like to think I know a little bit about much of the very traditional symphonic music. But then I recognize, you know, maybe 20% or 25% of the composers. So I know I'm kidding myself to think I know more than I do. But then when the music starts, there's this, you get it. You remember, oh, I know this, I know this. So you don't have to be an expert to be able to look forward to appreciating this. And sometimes there is beauty in the surprise of just how much you might recognize, but what you might be experiencing and learning for the first time. And I love that. I think that's just quite exciting. I want to just do a tease to the November concert, because I'd like to think I know just about every one of these.
Oh my goodness. Yes. I mean, if we don't sell this concert out, we're doing something absolutely wrong. Cause this is in the business, we call this a hit parade.
I love that. I love that.
And everything on that program, people know.
Yeah, it's huge. You went with the blockbusters, and I love that. And let me just, before we jump heavily into November 4th, remember the October show is the one we're focusing on first, because it's just right around the corner, literally 2 weeks from, you know, from this discussion. And then we've got the November event, November 4th. February 3rd is when the next one takes place into 23. March 17th, and then the wrap up is May 5th. So we don't have to make a decision now on which show we want to attend, although we can certainly, because tickets are on sale as we speak. But if you want to be a part of this 61st season in some capacity, and you want to try sort of dipping your toe in such a way that you are very familiar with what's going on, what you expect to hear and see, this Music of John Williams event on November 4th. I mean, one of my most favorite pieces of music is the Jurassic Park theme. I hear it when I don't want to hear it in my head. It's one of those things that just sticks with me day and night. But these are going to get into our head when we are sitting in this beautiful venue and enjoying this music. So tell us a little bit about what we can expect for November 4th. And maybe this is an opportunity to bring somebody new that has never experienced the symphony before, and maybe some of our younger friends to participate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, John Williams is just a character that, I mean, I wouldn't be involved in classical music if it wasn't for John Williams. That just, those soundtracks made us feel something, whether it was nervous or excited or overwhelmed or whatever it is. Whenever we'd get to the end of the movie E.T. when I was a kid, I was just, I'm just, you know, completely bawling my eyes out, that dee-da, ya-da, da-da, dee-da, dee-da. I mean, those, or even, ba-dee-da-da-da-da. Like, we know these themes. We know all these themes, and they've taken us in such extraordinary adventures. And so I just have the utmost respect for John Williams, and for anyone in the music world that does, or outside the music world that doesn't know and thinks, oh, yeah, those musicians, yeah, those Pops concerts, that's not really their thing. Oh, no. But when it's John Williams, it is our thing, because it's so beautifully put together. It is crafted in a Wagnerian quality. It has all the good, juicy stuff and all the incredible orchestration of any great romantic composer. So I just want to put it out there that I have the greatest of respect for John Williams. He's also an extremely kind human being who actually sells us his music, and instead of renting it to us and things like that. I was lucky enough to sit next to him during a dinner at Tanglewood on Parade in the summer of 2005. And I mean, just to be able to sit down with your hero and say the two words, thank you, is such a fulfilling situation. So I'm telling you that I am moved to tears by nearly all of these pieces when I'm up there, because my inner child is glowing so bright. And so is all of the musicians on stage and all the audience members. It's actually really fun to do these kind of Williams concerts, because if we're all in agreement that it can be this kind of experience, it can get downright raucous. People can just be cheering like crazy for even the notion that we're about to play Star Wars. So I like the feels that come with this, and I encourage people to, you know, come dressed up if you want, do anything you want to kind of celebrate your inner child and your movie nerd that we all, at this point in society, we all are. This is it, you know, Hook, Jurassic Park, Star Wars. We even have a little bit of music from, I think we have music on there that is from Star Wars, the new Star Wars even? I don't know. We have so much on there. I mean, if you don't like this music, like, check your pulse.
Oh, that's great. Well, we have talked through the October 7th concert. We have talked through November 4th. And so officially, we're going to leave it at that because that will give us more to talk about when we touch base again in the beginning of 2023. But that takes us through 2022 with this, the 61st season of the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra. All concerts take place on Fridays. They begin officially at 8 o'clock, although you can get there a bit earlier. The venue is lovely. And it is, of course, at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center on Michigan Avenue. You mentioned children. I know you've got some. I've got one myself. And I have to just give a little plug to the give you a chance to mention the Send a Child to the Symphony. So an opportunity to help young people learn about all these beautiful things we're talking about. Just briefly, tell us about that, Stephen.
Well, I mean, for all of us in classical music, we want to open up every door we can, whether it's through the concert experience or, you know, through a program like this where we're encouraging people to get a young, you know, help a young person see a show. That is the initial thing. The statistic that we actually can quote in classical music is really, it's just about getting people through the threshold. Once you get people through the door and they realize that there's not like lions and tigers and bears, oh my, on the other end, and it's just a joyous experience. And children never come with that kind of judgment to it anyways. And you'll be amazed at how kids respond of almost any age. I mean, everyone knows their child's kind of like inner clock, right? I have 25 minutes, right? But I've always been amazed. My children have always been engaged. And most of the kids that come to shows are engaged throughout the program, even if it's one of these, you know, longer programs we're talking about. And then we, of course, have our education concerts in the spring, which will be very fun. And you learn about the instruments in the orchestra. And we try to kind of give you a couple of different levels about learning about musical things and what a symphony orchestra is and all that. But really, I just encourage anyone listening, if there's a young person in your life that's always singing a tune or just loves the radio, give them this chance. Take a child to see and hear and feel what it's like to be in the room where it happens. And it's also, for me, I'm the child of a sports writer, so to me, it's about seeing the almost Olympian event that is performing this difficult of classical music. It is so physical. Musicians get just as many injuries as NBA players. And actually, the percentage of people that make it in the NBA specifically is the exact same percentage of people that make it as professional musicians. Lots of people play high school ball. Some people play college ball. Still plenty of people play college ball. And then nobody plays in the NBA. There's this giant cutoff point, like medical school, right? So just to be able to present your children with the sort of LeBron James's of the violin or whatever in front of you, with any of our ensembles here in Southeast Michigan is something, you know, that we want to celebrate.
Oh, tremendous, tremendous. If you'd like more information on this project, it's a fundraising project, Send a Child to the Symphony. Definitely check out that website, dearbornsymphony.org. What a wonderful opportunity. If you don't have children or grandchildren of your own and you want to still provide that opportunity, it's a great project. So we'd love to have you participate in that as well. Maestro Stephen Jarvie, congratulations on putting together what looks like it is going to be a most exciting and successful 61st season. With this celebration of sound, we look forward to all the wonderful things we're going to hear once October 7th comes and goes. But before that happens, we want to encourage our listeners to get their seats secured so that they can be a part of the inaugural performance of this new season. We wish you all the best. Again, many thanks to not only you and your team, but most importantly to every member of that wonderful Dearborn Symphony Orchestra to provide this beauty and this enrichment to all of us, the concert goers. So we look forward to seeing you again, and we thank you so much for your time. Here's to a successful season.
Thank you so much. I'll see you at the symphony.
Look forward to it. Bye now. Thank you. We've got more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here, and stay with us. More things on the way. This is the WHFR Journal on the station making waves, WHFR.FM.
Hey, Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
You can't buy a best friend. You can love them, walk them, pet them, and care for them, whether they want you to or not. You can take a picture or 50. You can fly to the moon, travel the world, or just stay in bed. You can't buy a best friend like that. But you can adopt one. There are millions of pets waiting for a best friend just like you. Help us save them all at bestfriends.org.
Please join WHFR on Friday from 2 p.m. until 4 p.m. as DJ Kitty Love brings 2 hours of the best in new blues releases and artists from the local Metro Detroit area to the 89.3 FM airwaves. Listen to all hues of blues during the Highway 61 cruise at Henry Ford College Radio, WHFR.FM.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek with you for the rest of the hour. We thank Maestro Stephen Jarvie and Susan McGraw for that wonderful, engaging conversation we enjoyed in the first segment of today's WHFR Journal. And to conclude things, actually, we're going to bring things a little bit full circle. Now, of course, Stephen Jarvie, prior to his appointment here as with the Dearborn Symphony, also has worked with an organization, an orchestra in Florida called the New World Symphony, where one of his great mentors in his career was truly one of the great American conductors, Michael Tilson Thomas, probably like right up there with Leonard Bernstein in terms of great American conductors. And to round out our show today, we're going to turn to a TED Talk that Michael Tilson Thomas gave a decade ago in 2012 as part of a TED conference in Long Beach. It's entitled Music and Emotion Through Time. Now, in this epic overview, Michael Tilson Thomas traces the development of classical music through the development of written notation, the record, and, of course, the remix. It is very, very poignant and obviously a very timely discussion. Now, in addition to his work with the New World Symphony in Florida, where he served as artistic director and has stepped down earlier this year, he announced, Michael Tilson Thomas has probably most well known for his work with the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra as well. He did announce earlier this year some health problems, an aggressive form of cancer that he is dealing with, and stepped away from some of those administrative roles, but also still behind the podium when allowed and when he's obviously able to. And that was certainly the case a few weeks ago at Tanglewood, where he was able to conduct the Boston Symphony Orchestra for a couple of evenings. It's where Michael Tilson Thomas probably had his first great recognition, winner of the Koussevitzky Prize at Tanglewood in 1969. And there, over the course of a weekend, he conducted what were considered triumphant performances of a number of pieces, including Aaron Copland's Third Symphony and Beethoven's Symphony Number 9. So anyway, we go back to a decade ago and listen to Michael Tilson Thomas and him talking about music and emotion through time here on the WHFR Journal.
Well, when I was asked to do this TED talk, I really chuckled because, you see, my father's name was Ted, and much of my life, especially my musical life, is really a talk that I'm still having with him, or the part of me that he continues to be. Ted was a New Yorker, an all-around theater guy, and he was a self-taught illustrator and musician. He didn't read a note, and he was profoundly hearing impaired, yet he was my greatest teacher, because even through the squeaks of his hearing aids, his understanding of music was profound. And for him, it wasn't so much the way the music goes as about what it witnesses and where it can take you. And he did a painting of this experience, which he called In the Realm of Music. Now, Ted entered this realm every day by improvising in a sort of Tin Pan Alley style, like this. But he was tough when it came to music. He said, there are only two things that matter in music, what and how. And the thing about classical music, that what and how, it's inexhaustible. That was his passion for the music. Both my parents really loved it. They didn't know all that much about it, but they gave me the opportunity to discover it together with them. And I think inspired by that memory, it's been my desire to try and bring it to as many other people as I can, to sort of pass it on through whatever means. And how people get this music, how it comes into their lives, really fascinates me. One day in New York, I was on the street, and I saw some kids playing baseball between stoops and cars and fire hydrants. And a tough, slouchy kid got up to bat, and he took a swing and really connected, and he watched the ball fly for a second, and then he went, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- here. How did this piece of 18th century Austrian aristocratic entertainment turn into the victory crow of this New York kid? How was that passed on? How did he get to hear Mozart? Well, when it comes to classical music, there's an awful lot to pass on, much more than Mozart, Beethoven, or Tchaikovsky, because classical music is an unbroken living tradition that goes back over 1,000 years. And every one of those years has had something unique and powerful to say to us about what it's like to be alive. And the raw material of it, of course, is just the music of everyday life. It's all the anthems and dance crazes and ballads and marches. But what classical music does is to distill all of these musics down, to condense them to their absolute essence, and from that essence create a new language, a language that speaks very lovingly and unflinchingly about who we really are. It's a language that's still evolving. Now, over the centuries, it grew into the big pieces we always think of, like concertos and symphonies, but even the most ambitious masterpiece can have as its central mission to bring you back to a fragile and personal moment, like this one from the Beethoven Violin Concerto. Simple, so evocative, so many emotions seem to be inside of it. Yet, of course, like all music, it's essentially not about anything. It's just a design of pitches and silence and time, and the pitches, the notes, as you know, are just vibrations. They're locations in the spectrum of sound, and whether we call them 440 per second, A, or 3,729, B flat, trust me, that's right. They're just phenomena. But the way we react to different combinations of these phenomena is complex and emotional and not totally understood. And the way we react to them has changed radically over the centuries, as have our preferences for them. So, for example, in the 11th century, people liked pieces that ended like this. And in the 17th century, it was more like this. And in the 21st century, now, your 21st century ears are quite happy with this last chord, even though a while back it would have puzzled or annoyed you or sent some of you running from the room. And the reason you like it is because you've inherited, whether you knew it or not, centuries worth of changes in musical theory, practice, and fashion. And in classical music, we can follow these changes very, very accurately because of the music's powerful silent partner, the way it's been passed on, notation. Now, the impulse to notate, or more exactly, I should say, encode music, has been with us for a very long time. In 200 BC, a man named Seculos wrote this song for his departed wife and inscribed it on her gravestone in the notational system of the Greeks. And 1,000 years later, this impulse to notate took an entirely different form. And you can see how this happened in these excerpts from the Christmas Mass, Puer Natus Est Nobis, For Us Is Born. In the 10th century, little squiggles were used just to indicate the general shape of the tune. And in the 12th century, a line was drawn, like a musical horizon line, to better pinpoint the pitch's location. And then, in the 13th century, more lines and new shapes of notes locked in the concept of the tune exactly, and that led to the kind of notation we have today. Well, notation not only passed the music on, notating and encoding the music changed its priorities entirely because it enabled the musicians to imagine music on a much vaster scale. Now, inspired moves of improvisation could be recorded, saved, considered, prioritized, made into intricate designs. And from this moment, classical music became what it most essentially is, a dialogue between the two powerful sides of our nature, instinct and intelligence. And there began to be a real difference at this point between the art of improvisation and the art of composition. Now, improviser senses and plays the next cool move, but a composer is considering all possible moves, testing them out, prioritizing them out until he sees how they can form a powerful and coherent design of ultimate and enduring coolness. Now, some of the greatest composers like Bach were combinations of these two things. Bach was like a great improviser with the mind of a chess master. Mozart was the same way. But every musician strikes a different balance between faith and reason, instinct and intelligence, and every musical era had different priorities of these things, different things to pass on, different what's and how's. So in the first 8 centuries or so of this tradition, the big what was to praise God. And by the 1400s, music was being written that tried to mirror God's mind as could be seen in the design of the night sky. The how was a style called polyphony, music of many independently moving voices that suggested the way the planets seemed to move in Ptolemy's geocentric universe. This was truly the music of the spheres. This is the kind of music that Leonardo da Vinci would have known, and perhaps its tremendous intellectual perfection and serenity meant that something new had to happen, a radical new move, which in 1600 is what did happen. This, of course, was the birth of opera, and its development put music on a radical new course. The what now was not to mirror the mind of God, but to follow the emotional turbulence of man. And the how was harmony, stacking up the pitches to form chords. And the chords, it turned out, were capable of representing an incredible varieties of emotions. And the basic chords were the ones we still have with us, the triads, either the major one, which we think is happy, or the minor one, which we perceive as sad. But what's the actual difference between these two chords? It's just these two notes in the middle, right? It's either E natural at 659 vibrations per second, or E flat at 622. So the big difference between human happiness and sadness? 37 freaking vibrations. So you can see in a system like this, there was enormous subtle potential of representing human emotions. And in fact, as man began to understand more his complex and ambivalent nature, harmony grew more complex to reflect it. Turned out it was capable of expressing emotions beyond the ability of words. Now, with all this possibility, music, classical music, really took off. It's the time in which the big forms began to arise. And the effects of technology began to be felt also, because printing put music, the scores, the code books of music, into the hands of performers everywhere. And new and improved instruments made the age of the virtuoso possible. This is when those big forms arose, the symphonies, the sonatas, the concertos. And in these big architectures of time, composers like Beethoven could share the insights of a lifetime. A piece like Beethoven's Fifth, basically witnessing how it was possible for him to go from sorrow and anger. Over the course of a half an hour, step by exacting step of his route to the moment when he could make it across to joy. And it turned out the symphony could be used for more complex issues, like gripping ones of culture, such as nationalism or quest for freedom or the frontiers of sensuality. But whatever direction the music took, one thing until recently was always the same, and that was when the musicians stopped playing, the music stopped. Now, this moment so fascinates me. I find it such a profound one. What happens when the music stops? Where does it go? What's left? What sticks with people in the audience at the end of a performance? Is it a melody or a rhythm or a mood or an attitude? And how might that change their lives? To me, this is the intimate, personal side of music. It's the passing on part. It's the why part of it. And to me, that's the most essential of all. Mostly, it's been a person-to-person thing, a teacher-student, performer-audience thing. And then around 1880 came this new technology that first mechanically, then through analogs, then digitally, created a new and miraculous way of passing things on, albeit an impersonal one. People could now hear music all the time, even though it wasn't necessary for them to play an instrument, read music, or even go to concerts. And technology democratized music by making everything available. It spearheaded a cultural revolution in which artists like Caruso and Bessie Smith were on the same footing. And technology pushed composers to tremendous extremes, using computers and synthesizers to create works of intellectually impenetrable complexity beyond the means of performers and audiences. At the same time, technology, by taking over the role that notation had always played, shifted the balance within music between instinct and intelligence way over to the instinctive side. The culture in which we live now is awash with music of improvisation that's been sliced, diced, layered, and God knows, distributed and sold. What's the long-term effect of this on us or on music? Nobody knows. The question remains, what happens when the music stops? What sticks with people? Now that we have unlimited access to music, what does stick with us? Well, let me show you a story of what I mean by really sticking with us. I was visiting a cousin of mine in an old age home, and I spied a very shaky old man making his way across the room on a walker. He came over to a piano that was there, and he balanced himself and began playing something like this. And he said something like, Symphony, Beethoven, and I suddenly got it, and I said, "Friend, by any chance, are you trying to play this?" And he said, yes, I was a little boy. The symphony, Isaac Stern, the concerto, I heard it. And I thought, my God, how much must this music mean to this man that he would get himself out of his bed across the room to recover the memory of this music that, after everything else in his life is sloughing away, still means so much to him. Well, that's why I take every performance so seriously, why it matters to me so much. I never know who might be there, who might be absorbing it, and what will happen to it in their life. But now I'm excited that there's more chance than ever before possible of sharing this music. That's what drives my interest in projects like the TV series Keeping Score with the San Francisco Symphony, that looks at the backstories of music, and working with young musicians at the New World Symphony on projects that explore the potential of the new performing arts centers for both entertainment and education. And of course, the New World Symphony led to the YouTube Symphony and projects on the internet that reach out to musicians and audiences all over the world. And the exciting thing is, all this is just a prototype. There's a role here for so many people, teachers, parents, performers, to be explorers together. Sure, the big events attract a lot of attention, but what really matters is what goes on every single day. We need your perspectives, your curiosity, your voices, and it excites me now to meet people who are hikers, chefs, code writers, taxi drivers, people I never would have guessed who love the music and who are passing it on. You don't need to worry about knowing anything. If you're curious, if you have a capacity for wonder, if you're alive, you know all that you need to know. You can start anywhere, ramble a bit, follow traces, get lost, be surprised, amused, inspired. All that what, all that how is out there waiting for you to discover its why, to dive in and pass it on. Thank you.
Conductor Michael Tilson Thomas and his TED Talk, Music and Emotion Through Time. It was given at the TED Conference in Long Beach in 2012, presented to you today here on the WHFR Journal. Michael Tilson Thomas, currently the Artistic Director Emeritus of the New World Symphony in Miami, Florida, and also Conductor Emeritus of the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra in Miami. He served as a mentor to Stephen Jarvie, who is the conductor and director of the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra, your Dearborn Symphony Orchestra, and he was our guest on the first half of the show. Music director Stephen Jarvie and the rest of the Dearborn Symphony look forward to seeing you on October 7th for their first concert of the season, Journey on the Orient Express. Concerts continue throughout the year with performances in November, February, March, and May. You can get all of the details at DearbornSymphony.org or call them at 313-565-2424. That's 313-565-2424 or DearbornSymphony.org. My name's Alan Mazurek. It's been so great to spend time with you, Susan McGraw, and music director Stephen Jarvie on today's WHFR Journal. Do stay tuned. We've got more music coming up for your Friday afternoon. Kitty Love taking us on a trip down Highway 61. We're going to bring it back to basics and bring you the blues this Friday afternoon, as we always do here on WHFR. From the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported public radio, also online at WHFR.fm, making waves. Have a great week. We'll be back next week with more on the WHFR Journal.
Hey, everybody. This is Miss Marjan from the R&B Soul Groove. I'm going to tell you something. Something very good. Every Saturday, catch me here on 89.3 FM from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. I'm going to be playing R&B soul music from back in the day all the way up till the early 2000s. I'll also have some interviews with artists and musicians from around the way. Hey, what can I say? So you don't want to miss it. Every Saturday from 1 p.m. till 3 p.m. here at WHFR 89.3 FM, the station making the waves.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
Or if that resume was from someone who
worked 12-hour shifts at the recycling company with my dad, who's 72. That taught me a work ethic that I carry with me every day.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone.
Growing up where I did, a lot of things could have gotten in the way of my goals. But I learned to push through, and that's what I bring to work every day.
So maybe it's time we look beyond the resume and look to grads of life. Discover new ways to develop great talent that are so much more than what's on paper at gradsoflife.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
Mexico.